Nihal Punia, New Delhi.
From Feature Story News in Paris, I'm Elena Casas.
Yeah, thanks, Elena. Appreciate that. How you doing? It's Thursday, April 11th, 2019. Lots of things happening today. Lots to talk about. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show. Tweet me now, between now and the end of the programme. I look forward to hearing from you. Live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester. Multiple platforms as well. Let's just get on with the show.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Ray McGovern will join me in about 20 minutes' time to talk about his friend Julian Assange. You've heard the news. I don't have to tell you again. We'll have a look at it in a couple of minutes' time. The latest on Julian Assange, one of the founders of WikiLeaks, who's been or had been at the Ecuadorian embassy for 7 years, was taken out of there today, was arrested. He's been to court. He's been found guilty of breaching his bail. He'll be sentenced next month. But of course, the United States government wants him to be extradited to the United States to face charges there. All right, we're going to talk about that this hour. And Ray McGovern joins me, CIA analyst, a man who briefed many presidents. He's a peace activist these days and broadcaster. Ray McGovern will join me this hour. And a bit later on after that, we'll round up the rest of the day's news as well. All right then. Yes. How are you? How are you? Another lovely day here in Manchester. Glorious weather we've been having this week. A bit chilly. There was a frost on the old car this morning when I was driving her indoors to her place of work. Big frost, but it was beautiful. It was lovely to be out running this morning. It was. Well, to Julian Assange in a minute. I've been driven batshit crazy today. And I've had enough of it. I've been watching, obviously, Sky and the BBC for their live coverage of Brexit. Those are the two 24-hour news channels in the UK that I'm most interested in terms of their Brexit coverage, because their Brexit coverage is so biased towards Remain. I know that RT and other networks are covering it, but I'm interested in the bias. Anyway, it's driving me mad because they've been broadcasting at the, well, basically on site at Westminster. They've been broadcasting using their outside broadcast units, and there is a dipstick. There is a dipstick. There is a fucker Knuckles who's been standing there for weeks now screaming and screaming and screaming about stop Brexit. You know who I'm talking about. You know who I'm talking about. Because he's all you can hear. It's so annoying. Drives me mad. I'm all for free speech and everything, but but. So I dropped a tweet to Kay Burley earlier on. Kay Burley, who used to tweet me back, but anyway, I dropped a tweet to Kay Burley. I said, "Dear Kay, do me a favour. Remove one of your stilettos and hurl it at that fucking goon who's been screaming stop Brexit for 6 weeks now. Go on, Kay. Nail the little bastard right between the eyes. I will sing at your wedding to me." Got an email from Kay, though. She must have sent it in one of the ad breaks. "Dear Richie, you are the worst presenter I have ever heard in my life. My colleagues and I cannot make any sense of you. Your regional accent is incomprehensible. And marry you, really? Richie, dear boy, I'd rather give Adam Bolton a sponge bath. Sincerely yours, Kay." Sincerely yours, Kay. I would marry her if she was to chin that guy screaming all that stuff outside those outside broadcast units. I would. Snowflake emails. When interviewing Anne Widdecombe yesterday, I brought up the conduct of the BBC in terms of how it has been relentlessly pro-Remain. I didn't say that the BBC is a great institution. Once great, used to be great many moons ago. I do spend a lot of time criticising the BBC and its editorial. Don't be a snowflake. Me, endorse the BBC, please. Anyway, Brexit update later on to more serious matters this hour. WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange was arrested at the Ecuadorian embassy in London this morning. He's been there since 2012, and he initially entered the embassy to avoid extradition to Sweden over a sexual assault case that has been dropped, as you know. At Westminster Magistrates Court today, he was found guilty of failing to surrender. So he was found guilty, and he faces federal conspiracy charges in the United States related to one of the largest ever leaks of government secrets. Ecuador's president said the asylum was withdrawn after repeated violations of international conventions. Lenin Moreno said the country had reached its limit on the behaviour of Assange after he continued to intervene in the internal affairs of other countries. Moreno said the most recent incident occurred in January when WikiLeaks leaked Vatican documents. This and other publications have confirmed the world's suspicion that Assange is still linked to WikiLeaks. Therefore, he's involved in interfering in internal affairs of other states. The accusations against Assange also included blocking security cameras at the embassy, accessing security files, and confronting guards. So he was found guilty of breaching bail today. He awaits sentencing. There will be an extradition hearing. This is important. His lawyer, Jennifer Robinson, spoke outside Westminster Magistrates Court only an hour ago. Here she is.
Since 2010, we've warned that Julian Assange would face prosecution and extradition to the United States for his publishing activities with WikiLeaks. Unfortunately, today we've been proven right. Mr. Assange was arrested this morning at about 10 o'clock at the Ecuadorian embassy after the ambassador formally notified him that his asylum would be revoked, and he was arrested by British police. We've today received a warrant and a provisional extradition request from the United States alleging that he has conspired with Chelsea Manning in relation to the materials that were published by WikiLeaks in 2010. This sets a dangerous precedent for all media organisations and journalists in Europe and elsewhere around the world. This precedent means that any journalist can be extradited for prosecution in the United States for having published truthful information about the United States. I've just been with Mr. Assange in the police cells. He wants to thank all of his supporters for their ongoing support, and he said, "I told you so."
I told you so, said Julian Assange. Now, some bureaus are reporting in the last half an hour that Sweden's Justice Department wants to reopen the allegations or reopen the investigation into the allegations that Assange raped a woman or women there. That's very interesting. Ray McGovern might have more on this, but it has been reported in the last half an hour. Assange's supporters will think, well, this is a proper stitch-up now. Maybe the UK won't extradite him to the United States. Maybe they'll ship him off to Sweden. And maybe the Swedes will then ship him off to the United States. Look, that's all conjecture at this point. Now, of course, various US politicians have called for his assassination. This is true. His imprisonment for life without parole. And some politicians have recommended that if he ever gets tried in America, that he is sentenced to death should he be found guilty. Basket case country, or at least, Congress and the Senate full of basket cases like Lindsey Graham, lunatics like that, and John Bolton. Of course, John Bolton is not a congressman or a senator. Now, if his life is in danger, either that he faces capital punishment, would his extradition be blocked? When I say either, so if his life is in danger in terms of that he might face the death penalty or that he might be bumped off while he's in the United States, would his extradition be blocked by the UK? Well, after the announcement of his arrest this morning, the Minister of State for Europe and the Americas, Alan Duncan, was asked on Sky News, would he be extradited if it was felt that his life could be in danger? This is Alan Duncan's response.
That is our broad policy all the time in all circumstances. So it equally applies to Julian Assange. that he will not be extradited if he's going to face the death penalty. So that will apply to him. And so as a matter of policy, yes, that is the case.
Mm. Have you spoken to the American government?
I haven't, no. Not about this. I mean, as Minister
of the Foreign Office. Do you think the Foreign Office have?
I don't think that we are required to discuss an individual case like this in those terms. Our discussions have been with the government of Ecuador, and the new government there under President Moreno have wanted to bring this to an end. So that has required cooperation between us and them.
Mm. Alan Duncan there. Now, earlier, Kay Burley spoke with a close friend of Julian Assange, the former army officer and restaurateur Vaughan Smith. It was a testy exchange. Vaughan Smith says here that Trump, that is Donald Trump, wants a big public show trial in election year. This is Vaughan Smith with Kay Burley.
Obama thought, okay, this probably doesn't stand up. He's a publisher, and decided not to do it and let Chelsea Manning out of jail after 4 years. Chelsea Manning is now back in jail. Clearly what Trump wants is a sort of a trophy show trial before 2020 election.
You can't hack government servers or comply with someone else to commit...
hang on, this is our government.
Finish my question and then you can answer it. Is that possible? You cannot.
Of course it's possible.
It is illegal. Thank you. It is illegal to hack government servers or to conspire with someone else in order to do that. That is illegal. So that is the charge that is likely to be
Hang on. You're talking about something that needs to be tested in the courts, frankly.
Of course.
You sound like the American government is our government. It's not our government. This is a foreign government. It's a foreign state. I mean, if it was Russia, if Julian had maybe...
But it's not Russia.
But it doesn't matter. It's America. It's a foreign state. We seem to act as if America has the right to pull people from our country just because they don't like them. And you're talking... if there's a certainty...
No, but they have an ability to ask our government to extradite somebody that they feel needs to answer these allegations in a court of law. That's what America is asking us to do.
Would we pull somebody out of an embassy who's got asylum for the Russian government or just the American government?
Surely that's a nebulous argument.
Why?
Because the American government have asked us specifically whether we can provide information from, well, provide this gentleman to them via video link to see whether there is a case to answer. Why is that not acceptable?
It's not acceptable because we know what's going on here. It's not acceptable because we wouldn't do it for other governments. It's, you know, we have extremely weak extradition laws with the United States of America. You know, Julian has been in all the supernatural bodies, for example, the intra-American Court of Human Rights has judged in his favour that he was he received asylum. Have been entitled to it. Ecuador has been pressured by the Americans and us, simply to do America's bidding.
Mm. To do America's bidding, fair enough. Good stuff there from Vaughan Smith. As for Donald Trump making hay while the sun shines in election year with a show trial, didn't Trump say several times over the years that he was a fan of WikiLeaks?
This just came out. WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks.
Yeah, of course he said he loved and liked WikiLeaks. Of course he did. Hillary Clinton, the DNC, leaks, emails, all the rest of it. Servers. You know all that by now. Look, the lawyer of the woman who accused Julian Assange of raping her back in 2010 said today that her client would ask Swedish prosecutors to reopen this investigation, which was dropped in 2017. So the woman who made the allegations in 2010 has instructed her lawyer to reopen, to ask for the investigation to be reopened. I have no idea about the legitimacy of these allegations. I don't think anybody does, really. But I have a lot of sympathy with the supporters of Assange who believe that these allegations play a big part or have a lot to do with the attempts of the US government to get Assange extradited there. What were the allegations? Well, they go back to 2010. The alleged victim says she met Assange in Stockholm at a WikiLeaks conference. She said he had sex with her as she slept without using a condom, despite repeatedly having denied him unprotected sex. Assange denies these allegations. It's been reported that the alleged victim and her lawyer have petitioned the Swedish prosecutor to open that investigation again. We're going to have Ray McGovern on the show shortly, live from, I think Ray is in the US this week. He is a friend of Assange. He's visited Assange. He knows him well, and he'll have a lot to say about this. Assange, right, what will we do? It's 19 minutes past the hour. Look, I'll read a few tweets. There's lots of tweets coming in there. Moinga tweets, Kay Burley is so condescending with her questions, can't stand her anymore, and I cringe with every clip played, says Moinga. Have to hear how these people do business, though, don't we? Kevin Osborne says, Assange has never been formally charged with a crime in Sweden. That's absolutely true. The investigation was closed back in 2017. David tweets, I wonder if the US asked for evidence in the Skripal fiasco. Would they have gotten it? Asks David. That's a good question. Dean Smith, how you, Dean? There is a certain freedom. Let's say when the gun is at your head and you look down the line of people on their knees waiting to be shot in the face and you think to yourself, I effing told you so. That's from Dean. Troy tweets, what a shit show. I was expecting this to happen, but I am truly shocked and feel sick. I have 3 kids that are going to be living with this in the future. Murray tweets, did Donald Trump not say he would pardon Assange? I never heard that, if he did, but I stand to be corrected. Faisal tweets, there are no victims making rape allegations in Sweden, just a bogus police investigation being used as a loophole, Richie, says Faisal. Well, that's patently not true. Somebody has made claims against Assange in the past. Whether they're true or not, Faisal, I have no idea. None. But why would I? But I understand why Julian Assange's supporters are very dubious and feel very strong that the allegations are bogus. Imagine if they're not bogus. Would be pretty terrible for the woman involved, wouldn't it? But look. Ricky, I'm not going to read your comment on Kay Burley. It's out there. People can see it. Just go to Richie Allen. My Twitter handle. Put Richie Allen Show, all one word in. Press enter. And you will see that there. Strong opinions on Kay Burley. Whatever you think of Kay Burley, and I've been very critical of Kay Burley over the years, she's not anywhere near the worst of them when it comes to the most senior broadcasters and presenters on UK television news. That's radio and television news. She's not nearly the worst of them. I'm not defending Kay's conduct. I've been unbelievably critical. I've gotten a lot of mileage out of our Kay over the years. Ray McGovern, by the way, you can read Ray at raymcgovern.com. That's raymcgovern.com. Ray has just posted an article entitled Requiem for the Fourth Estate. Emotions running high amongst the close friends and allies of Julian Assange. They're really worried here that when he's sentenced next month, that he will get a custodial sentence for his bail condition breach, his breach of bail conditions, and that will then lead to him being extradited to the United States. So we're going to get into that with Ray McGovern in a couple of minutes' time. I'm just waiting for Ray to sign in. Keep the tweets coming in, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I'm really interested in what you have to say on this. I will be doing a Brexit roundup. Obviously, a lot went on in Brussels overnight. A lot has happened today. I'll do that later on in the programme. It won't be dull. And then I want to talk about Australian rugby union players getting into trouble for homophobic comments later. I want to talk about that later on as well. And I want to talk later on about a black writer who's claimed that white people don't sit next to him on trains. I had a bit of a rant late last night about this on Twitter shortly after my football team were defeated by the mighty Barcelona. That had nothing to do with my bad mood. I saw a clip on BBC, courtesy of BBC Radio 5 Live, where a black author said that in the mornings, meaning rush hour, if there is a seat next to him on public transport, that white people don't sit down next to him. He was talking about casual racism, and it drove me absolutely fucking mad reading it and listening to the guy. So I want to talk about that a little bit later on as well. All right then, so this is your Richie Allen Show. Thank you for tuning in as always. Love the fact that you do. It is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. That is a fact, by the way. I love that. There's no room for false modesty in the media. I am number one. This is the Mock Turtles on the Richie Allen Show, Thursday. It is the 11th of April, 2019. The weather is beautiful. Manchester is glorious. And the Mock Turtles are from this great city. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Ray McGovern joins me in 3 minutes. Music from the Mock Turtles on the Richie Allen Show, 25 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining us. I know a lot of listeners joining us from North America. Very keen to hear my guest this hour. As I've been talking about for the last 20 to 25 minutes, the co-founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, was arrested at the Ecuadorian embassy earlier this morning. He'd been there since 2012, of course, to avoid extradition to Sweden. He faces US federal conspiracy charges. His supporters and friends and the media in general, as well they should be, are very concerned about what this might mean. Him having been found guilty today of breaching his bail conditions, he will be sentenced next month, and there will be a video link hearing with a judge in Virginia, apparently. And this is all very worrying indeed. Let's welcome back to the program a legendary CIA analyst. He's a terrific broadcaster as well and writer. You can read him at raymcgovern.com. He's obviously been writing about this over the last few days, and historically he's been writing about this as well. Let's welcome back to the show our friend Ray McGovern. Ray, it's a pretty dreadful day. If there's any consolation at all, and I don't mean to be flippant or glib, the man doesn't look well at all, and I reckon he needs pretty urgent medical care. Again, I don't mean to be silly or flippant or glib. That's the only tiny positive I can take out of it. He didn't look well, Ray.
The last time I saw him, which was November 2016, he also didn't look well. But it's hard to distinguish between illness and deprivation of sunlight, of freedom, of an ability to communicate. I mean, all that is very, very depressing, of course. And so although he looked as though he hadn't been outside for 5 years, which he hadn't, he was still very vibrant and very, very, very much with it and feeling as though he had accomplished his mission in spreading some truth around. And this was just 3 days before the November 2016 election between which Donald Trump won. Now, I'm not saying that Julian Assange was particularly pleased that Donald Trump won. My guess is that he was not. But he did know that he exposed the incredible corruption within the Democratic Party, and in the process revealing that Hillary Clinton, in her own emails, it became clear that she had stolen the nomination from Bernie Sanders. Now, that's big. That's really big, because Bernie Sanders, in my view, would have easily won hands down against Donald Trump. Not so Hillary Clinton. Why? Because nobody trusted her. Okay. Yeah. So bottom line here is that, you don't need to blame the Russians on this. Hillary Clinton was quite
We're just losing you there momentarily, Ray. We've just momentarily lost you there. Your mic is gone. I can't hear you at all. I don't know if you're...
Okay, let's see. Maybe can you hear me now?
Oh, you're back in the room, Ray. That's great. Yeah, we just lost you for about 15 seconds there. You'd said rather than blame Russia, we were talking about the Clinton email leaks that demonstrated clearly that there was corruption. There was questions to answer about how Bernie Sanders was robbed of the nomination.
That's correct. And, of course, the emails that Julian Assange released were authentic, as all of the information he has released has been. And no one threw any doubt on their authenticity. And so, you know, somebody needed to be blamed for this. And it was a magnificent distraction from the content of the emails. But the mainstream press in our country made it, why did the Russians do this? Why did the Russians do this? Why did the Russians attack us? Why did Putin try to throw the election to? And the whole story buried in those emails was not told. So somebody had to pay for all this, and they picked Julian Assange and identified him with the Russians. Now, what most people don't realize is that the President of the United States at the time, his name was Obama, if I recall correctly, and 2 days before he left office, and just 13 days after he had been briefed up and down by what I call the Gang of Four, CIA, FBI, National Intelligence Director, and the NSA fellow, who had tried to persuade him that Russia hacked into the emails, the DNC emails, that is, and gave them to WikiLeaks, what Obama said 2 days before he left office was this. The conclusions, and I quote, the conclusions of the intelligence community with respect to how WikiLeaks got the, quote, Russian hack, end quote, are inconclusive, period, end quote. So what we have is inconclusive conclusions. Now, that having been said, that having been sort of acknowledging the lack of this very important link. If you don't know how WikiLeaks got the Russian hacks, and well, number maybe they didn't, and maybe the Russians didn't even hack. The other thing, of course, is that what they were trying to blame Assange on was being a tool of the Russians. There's never been that. More recently, about a year ago, Julian Assange, well, actually it was in March of 2017, so wow, that's 2 years ago. But Julian Assange was on the receiving end of more leaks. Now, people talk about hacking, but what Julian does is receive very gracefully leaks. I think that's why they call it WikiLeaks, Richie.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. In any case, John Brennan, the head of the CIA, in 2015 set up a large new directorate. Now, when I was working, there were only three directorates, so this is a big deal. Thousands of people. What was it? It was the Directorate for Cyber Innovation. Whoa. Now, what's that all about? Creating cyber tools with the help of NSA so they can do all kinds of magical things like, and please listen, like hacking into a computer server or computers themselves, disguising who it was that hacked in, and then falsely attributing it to some country like, oh, let's say Russia.
The Russians.
Now, they're working five languages, now Chinese, Korean, Arabic, Farsi, and Russian. So these Cyrillic breadcrumbs that were left on these intrusions, so to speak, by, Robert Mueller says, the GRU, you know, an expert intelligence organization, military intelligence organization of Russia, who doesn't leave telltale signs behind normally, especially not the name and patronymic of the first head of the KGB or its forerunner, Cheka. His name was Felix Emundovich, and somehow or other, whoever wanted this to be discovered left his name, Felix Emundovich, right on this intrusion metadata. So, bottom line here is that Julian Assange on the 7th of March of 2017. I said, hey, guess what? We've got another leak. And this one rivals in importance and in volume all the material that Ed Snowden brought out into Hong Kong. That's pretty big, right?
Pretty
so
big.
So here's
yeah.
the first two. Here's the first two. It has to do with cyber tools worked out in the Directorate of Digital Innovation of the CIA. First one is one that lets you take control of another car with your computer and make it go 110 miles an hour and kill somebody that way. That's the second one is it's a TV. You think it's off, right? But it's monitoring and sending all the information for what you're saying in your bedroom or wherever. No, those were two sexy things. And the New York Times said, well, yeah, we'll publish. And they did. Now, here's the point. On March 31st, Julian Assange announced that there was this cyber tool called Marble Framework that allowed you to intrude into a computer or server, disguise who the CIA uses big words on these things, obfuscate. Okay, it allows you to obfuscate who hacked in, and it allows you to falsely attribute it to somebody else. Now, New York Times didn't publish that. They went, as they always do, and I'm not exaggerating. I know how this works. They go to the CIA or the administration in some way and say, now, well, this is dynamite. This could, gosh, you know, we talk about Russian hack. It could be, so should we publish? The guidance they get. No, for God's sake, don't publish that, you know?
How can you be sure of that, Ray? Ray McGovern is our guest, folks. This is dynamite stuff, and I'm not being sensational when I say that. It's hugely important. You're listening to a highly decorated, credible, and brilliant ex-CIA analyst who briefed multiple presidents. He's a peace activist and a great broadcaster and writer. Ray, I wouldn't be doing my job, and I tried to get the other side today, as I always do, and it's not easy, because my sympathies are with Julian Assange, and I'm inclined to go along with you, but it doesn't make for a great interview. So in the absence of the other side, how can you be absolutely sure that the New York Times would go to the intelligence agencies or to the government and say, we've got this dynamite stuff from Assange, doesn't reflect too well on you, should we publish it? Why should the American people believe that?
Well, Richie, as you probably remember, I'm from the Bronx, right?
That's right.
So we like to give for instances, right?
Yeah.
So I'll give you a for instance. In the summer, early summer of 2004, a fellow working for the New York Times named James Risen uncovered the fact that the NSA, at Dick Cheney's direction, was intercepting, monitoring, storing all the conversations that I made on my telephone or on my email. Now, I said to Bill Binney, who was a former technical director of NSA, my God, Bill, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They can't possibly do that. And he said, Ray, they can. I helped them create that capability, and they do. The motto is, at all. Now, what's my point? James Risen had this story in July of 2004. Oh, we had an election. George Bush was running for re-election. And so James Risen said, you know, let's publish this. And his masters at the New York Times said, no, we can't do that. It's too close to the election. And Risen said, well, wait a second, November. He counted up the months. He said, well, July, August, September. You do the math. It's not close to the election. We need to publish. And they were saying, no, we can't do that.
Wow.
What happened? So that's July of 2004. In December of 2005, James Risen goes to his masters at the Times and says, you know, this is a little embarrassing. You're paying me big bucks, but you've suppressed that story. But now it's going to be in a book. The galley, it's going to be published in 2 weeks.
Oh, God.
So Sulzberger, the head of the Times, and the Washington bureau chief go into the Oval Office to tell President Bush that the jig is up. They have to publish this story. It's just too damn embarrassing for the New York Times to have their ace journalist, an investigative journalist, with this story and appearing it, and it appearing first in a book. Okay, so Bush says, "No, no, you can't do that. No, national security, you can't do that." And Sulzberger, you know, in almost in tears, "Look, we held off for 15 months on this thing. Might give us a break. We have our own equity." He said, "Nobody's going to pay any attention." So Bush said, "Well, I don't agree." So they went out, and a couple days later, which I think was the 15th of December, 2005. So do the math, 15th of December, 2005, and they had this stuff in July of 2004. So did Bush win the election? Of course he won the election. Not by a heck of a lot. Would it have mattered if the New York Times did its job and didn't seek permission from the White House to publish the thing? Of course it would have mattered. So, you know, the New York Times, we don't have a memo that New York Times tells its journalists, please check all sensitive articles with the CIA PR people. But we know it has happened, and we know it happens regularly on things of particular sensitivity. And this one, of course, Bill Binney and I, we've done a lot of forensic stuff, but we've made some conclusions based on the principles of physics, right? Now, we can't say that about this judgment, but we lean to the notion that rather than the Russians having acted to the DNC and leaving these telltale signs, it was John Brennan and the Digital Innovation Directorate that he created back in 2015.
Ray, just before I ask you a question about the Russians, because we have a very healthy audience here, and I'm getting tweeted by people whom I've never seen before on my Twitter timeline. They know you're on, obviously, and they are sticklers for the notion that Assange was at least in some cooperation with the Russian government. I'll be fair and I'll put those points to you in a minute. But what I want to clarify is, Ray McGovern is our guest this hour. Thanks for coming on, Ray, because I know today everybody in the world wants to talk to you. Ray's a friend of Julian Assange. Assange's supporters and friends and every other journalist in the world worth his or her salt. Ray is horrified at what's happened today and what has been happening to Julian Assange. What you've just said to me there, as eloquently as you always do, is I'm taking this to mean that they're not after him over the Chelsea Manning leaks, the dreadful video on all of those cables. They're not after him for the Guantanamo files. They're after him because of recent activity whereby he's exposed some of the very dark and sinister things that the CIA are doing. Is that what you're telling me, Ray, and the NSA? Because the UK media is going with, it's all about the Chelsea Manning leaks and that sort of stuff. But it's actually more recent stuff. They see Julian as an enemy today, not as an enemy of yesterday.
Well, it's both, really, Richie. They have it in for him for the Afghan and the Iraqi war logs,
yeah,
which show, without any doubt, war crimes by U.S. forces in both countries, the most prominent of which is the so-called collateral murder video, which shows a U.S. Apache attack helicopter killing in cold blood 12 Iraqis or 12 people in Iraq during the surge, right, including killing two Reuters correspondents. Now, the video is bad enough. The audio, I would suggest, is even worse because what you have is two GIs saying, "Yeah, let's get them home. Give us, we're looking." And in the end, they shoot up a little van that had two little kids in it, with their father taking them, yeah, to school. It's really shocking just to hear the whole thing. Now, what most people don't know is that there was another correspondent. There was a correspondent with that unit. His name is David Finkel. He's a great big shot now at the Washington Post. He was with that unit. He saw that videotape. We know that because Chelsea Manning told us. And he wrote this book about the same unit, the unit that was, you know, guilty of all kinds of atrocities. And he called it the good soldiers. Awards for it. See? So there's no more poignant example of how mainstream journalists, so to speak, do the bidding of what I call the Mickey Mat, and people like Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, and Assange tell the truth, and who gets bloodied noses. Now, when I say Mickey Mat, I should probably spell that out. We used to talk about the MIC, you know, the military industrial complex, but it's much wider, it's much stronger, it's much more significant now, and it deserves a new acronym, and this is the one I've given. Listen carefully. Mickey Mat, Military Industrial Congressional Intelligence Media Academe Think Tank Complex. Now, why did I say media? Because in this day and age, it's the media that is the sine qua non for this Mickey Mat to succeed in causing tension around the world, enabling weapons production and weapons sales galore, and they're all in it together. And this is the first time I've been able to say that there is no more fourth estate. The media is right in the middle, just as it's right in the middle of this acronym. And the powerful forces are the ones that are behind the beating up and taking out of Julian Assange. I know how that feels. It happened to me in Congress not too long ago.
Gina Haspel. I remember the Gina Haspel hearing. We talked about that last year, and one of my listeners has asked me to ask you about that. I will ask you about that. I'm sorry now if I'm a bit more curt than usual, but I expect you at any time to tell me that you've got to go off and talk to somebody else. So forgive me. Mickey, man, that's very interesting, well, Ray. And you know,
that won't happen. That won't happen for another 20 minutes, Richie, so take your time.
Well, thanks for saying that and staying with me for another 20 minutes. Ray McGovern is our guest. Get on to raymcgovern.com. It's interesting you mentioned the media. One of my most enjoyable conversations in my time as a presenter was with you when I was doing television in London 5-6 years ago. You talked at length to me about the embedding of journalists and how this became not so much fashionable, but how it became a thing after the Vietnam War, because there was so much honest and proper reporting on the Vietnam War. It's a terrible, sad thing to hear somebody like you describe the media and, you know, to talk so candidly about what it is and what it's become. I want to just put to you, Ray, because there are dissenters, and I'm getting it in the ear now on email and on Twitter from people saying that I'm going along with my guest. I always put my cards on the table. You know, obviously I'm going to support the right of Julian Assange to do what he does and the right of him not to be extradited to the United States. But look, I'll give you just a very quick, brief summary of some of the comments we're getting from others who disagree with you. They've said that Julian never released anything negative about Russia. They say that whenever he's spoken publicly, when he's been on TV shows over the years, he's always said very strong pro-Russian things. They've said he used to do a show for Russia Today. And I'm being told by people that his leaks or WikiLeaks, Julian, of course, was in the Ecuadorian embassy, but some of Julian's opponents are telling me now that as well as him cozying up to Russia over the years, working for Russia Today, WikiLeaks were pretty strategic about the timing of their releases during the presidential election campaign, and it always seemed to favour Trump, and they always seemed to come out whenever Clinton seemed to be kind of getting ahead. And whatever Ray is saying about his friend, there is another side to it. Maybe Julian was too close to the Russians maybe over the years. Ray, what do you say to that?
Well, first, let me address RT. When RT asked me for an interview, I say, well, what do you want to talk about? And he said, well, I want to talk about this. And I said, well, I don't know. I'm not all about that. He said, we'll send you a link. So I look at the link and I could talk. I know something about that. I said, okay, can you come in at 4 o'clock? Yeah, I'm in. All right. Now, what am I trying to say? Not so with BBC.
Yeah.
Sky News. Al Jazeera, much less Fox or ABC or MSNBC. They always give me, or try to give me, they don't get it, a pre-interview interview. And so, you know, they want to know what I'm going to say before they let me get on their precious airtime. And so I say, nothing doing. You want to know what I want to say? I'm going to tell you when I'm on. See?
Right.
Archie has never, ever asked me to do that. So this is a genuine outfit. And if it were MSNBC or Fox News or any other people who want me on, I'm happy to go on. So the fact that I'm on RT is because I'm pretty much ostracized from all the, quote, mainstream media. So RT spreads around a lot of good stuff. And, you know, I hate to cite her as one of my sources, but there's a woman named Hillary Clinton who 5 years ago said, you know, when I travel, I watch Al Jazeera and RT, and I find it very instructive. Hillary Clinton.
That's okay. Right. That's right. Imagine that.
Yeah. Now, with respect to the timing, now, yeah, people need to, I mean, facts are really important here. What happened was in late May, and we know the three dates on which the DNC emails were copied, okay? They weren't hacked. They were copied onto an external storage device, or most probably a thumb drive, okay? With the 23rd, 25th, and 26th of May. Okay. Now we know that for a fact because we have the data. Okay. Now we also know that, what, 2 weeks more later, Julian Assange got up and said, told the press, we have emails related to Hillary Clinton pending publication. So this is not hard. Okay. End of May and now the 12th of June. Julian announces he has these emails. Now, what happens? Oh my God, you could just see Hillary. Now, I have to say I wasn't a fly on the wall or I wasn't moving in those circles anymore, but here she is around the table with all her advisors. My God, what am I going to do? He's got the DNC emails. It will show how we rooked, how we cheated. Bernie has another way. Oh my God, and the convention's coming up in 6 weeks. What are we going to do? And somebody says, I know, Hillary. We'll blame it on the Russians. And somebody says, oh, wait a second. It wasn't the Russians. It was WikiLeaks. That's okay. We hate them both.
Yeah,
Look at it as a twofer. We'll say that the Russians hacked and they gave them to WikiLeaks. And once that gets out in our captive media, then nobody's going to pay attention to the emails themselves. They're going to say, why did the Russians hack? Why did the Russians hack? Like, it worked like a charm. Now, the time sequence is really important. The 12th, Julian announces he has them. On the 14th, this reprobate CrowdStrike cyber security firm working for Hillary Clinton says, we have telltale signs that the Russians did it. And what did they adduce? They adduce contrived, falsified Microsoft type formats from Russia, and they leave these telltale signs on it. That's CrowdStrike. The next day, out of the ashes, Guccifer 2.0 arrives. Who is he? Who's Guccifer 2.0?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we don't know. And we use non-sexist language referring to, I mean, he, she, or it, right? But we do know that Guccifer 2.0 is a fraud. Out-and-out fraud. We can prove it from forensics. Bill Binney has the data. He showed it to me at lunch. And so Guccifer 2 is a shady character, and Guccifer 2, just as likely as, is probably a pseudonym for a fellow named John Brennan, who used to head the CIA and is sweating bullets this week.
Ray McGovern is our guest. That answers the question about, was he too close to Russia? I'm still getting tweets on this, and there are people who will probably never believe that he wasn't too... I've had a brief tweet from somebody with a very weird name who's saying that, you know, programs like this, The Richie Allen Show, seem to think that the Russians are Snow White, that it's not a country that does things in its own interest, that it's not a country that spies and all of that. I've never said any of that. But what Ray is telling you, and Ray has told me before, and Bill Binney, who came on this programme as a courtesy to Ray McGovern, has told me this before and has provided evidence to support it. It's very important. Ray, what's going to happen to Julian Assange? It's dreadful. We heard this afternoon that the woman who made an allegation against Julian back in 2010 has apparently petitioned her lawyer to ask the Swedish prosecutor to reopen an investigation that was closed a couple of years ago because there's really no evidence, as far as I can see. That's been reported again this afternoon. Some of our listeners who've got their conspiratorial hats on are worried that the UK might send him to Sweden, where then he might be sent on to the United States. I think the last time we spoke about Julian, you and I, you pointed out that some very senior politicians have in the past called for the man to be assassinated, and others have called for him to be sentenced to death if he ever sees a courtroom in the United States. How do you think this is going to proceed, Ray? What's going to happen?
Well, Rishi, before I address that, I feel compelled to cite my 60 years of experience watching Russia very closely since the day I decided to major in Russian undergraduate at Fordham University. I think I know something about the Russians. And I think I know that, you know, the Soviet Union fell apart back in, 1990, 1991. People still look at Russia as though it wants to dominate the world. This is not going to be nice for people who want to believe that, but Russia has no intention of dominating the world. Now, when people talk about Russian aggression, they need to know that this all started after the U.S. and its European allies sponsored a coup d'etat in Ukraine in February of 2014. Where was Putin? He was off in Sochi at the Olympics. He comes back the next day and he says, my God, what are we going to do about this? They're going to want to bring Ukraine into NATO? That would mean we'd lose our sole warm water, ice-free port down in Sevastopol. We have to do something about this. So what I'm saying here is that it was NATO constantly infringing east after promising not to. And just causing a reaction on the part of Putin that if people in the CIA didn't predict that happened, they just don't know anything about Russia. So what we see about Russian, quote, aggression, end quote, is a reaction to what NATO has been doing, citing Russia aggression in Crimea. Now, what's going to happen to Julian? Well, my God, what a bad day for the free press. I mean, I look at Britain and I say, my God, how long ago was it, the Magna Carta, about 800?
Yeah, 800 years. Yeah.
And the Bill of Rights in the United States, what's happened to the freedom of the press and the First Amendment? And I have to say that the corruption has just magnified to the extent that there is no more freedom of the press. And even the people like the Washington Post and the New York Times that profited immensely by the materials that Julian Assange put out, they don't even see this as a big problem for them because they, first they'll come for Julian Assange and then they'll stop. Well, I got news for them.
No, they won't.
They're trying to do, of course, is dissect the charges against Julian. They don't want to charge him for publishing. No, that would be a little too close to the bone. No, what they want to do is get him on charges of espionage, of conspiracy. And toward that end, they took Chelsea Manning, who, by the way, had been pardoned by Obama, and who, by the way, had spent several years in jail before she was pardoned. They got her locked up under a courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia, because she won't say the kinds of things that the prosecutors want the grand jury to hear about Julian Assange. What do they want to hear? They want to hear Chelsea Manning say, "Oh, well, you know, I really didn't want to do this, but Julian Assange, he sent me these memos and these passwords and all. He said, oh, please, please give me this for this." So there's a conspiracy. Now, what's the reality? Bradley Manning offered this stuff to the Washington Post and the New York Times, and they wouldn't take it. That's the reality, okay? And what really galls the powers that be is the fact that Julian has this incredible ability to accept leaks from the CIA, leaks from anywhere, and those people sometimes don't get caught. Now, Chelsea Manning did get caught, and she served her time. But now they have it back in the dungeon, and they're trying to get her to turn, quote, state's evidence, end quote, on Julian, even years after she's been pardoned. Now, if that's not a travesty of justice, you don't have to be a lawyer to figure that out. This is just bold, corrupt hooliganism. And, you know,
it's an outrage.
I used to be proud of the Anglo-American tradition of international law. Throw that to the winds. It's a new day here. And unless people like you and me get up in arms and do something about it, well, the same thing will happen as happened with sort of passive, obedient Germans back in the 30s.
It's an outrage what's happened to Chelsea Manning, to be coerced in that way to try and stitch up Julian Assange. And the fact that she's not doing it is a testimony to her fortitude and courage, because she must be absolutely terrified of the prospect of spending more time in prison. I want to ask you this, Ray, and then I will let you go, because I know the phone is going. And while sadly and tragically, and I'm not blowing smoke up your backside, it disgusts me. I've worked at every level of the media, commercial and national, and I'm proud of some of the things I've done, and I'm ashamed of some of the things I've done. But it is a travesty that a man who handed briefings to multiple presidents, that has that experience, could be ostracized by the national media, not only in the United States, but here. It's a disgusting thing that you're speaking to me and you're not speaking to the BBC at 6 p.m. because it's just gone 6 p.m. here in the UK. The BBC is live now, telling their lies, and they should be getting the other side of it from Ray McGovern. They're not.
Let me break in there, because I have to confess now, it's my own damn fault.
Well, it's not your own damn fault.
What I want to say is, for those of you who do Google, Google CNN Assange McGovern, and you will find an interview 9 years ago where they gave me, I had about 5 minutes. They wanted to get me to say that Julian Assange was a terrorist, not a publisher. Yeah. And I was loaded for bear. They had already had 19 people on saying he was a terrorist. Someone must have told them, "Oh, you got to be fair and balanced. Have McGovern on. He'll try to say he's a publisher." Well, tune into that, because those 4 minutes were the last time I've been on CNN domestically. And so, you know, in a weird sort of way, it's my own damn fault for not trimming my sails to what CNN wanted to hear, but telling the truth instead. That's the state of the fourth.
Well, we'll give up, Ray. I'll give up if it happens that men and women of your caliber ever, you know, stray from the integrity path and the honest path. I'll just quietly go away. I wanted to ask you this. They're going to run a bill. They've published a white paper called the Online Harms White Paper. You know about this. White paper means it is going to be law. It's a terrible thing. It's a terrifying thing for free speech in the United Kingdom, for the ability of independent journalists to make programmes and to put them on YouTube and elsewhere. I can't help but think, in the week that they announced this draconian Orwellian online harms, that we see Julian taken out, carried out, not even allowed walk, which I think was staged managed by the bullies who went to pick him up today. I think the two are related. That's my conspiracy theory hat on now. I think this was all timed to coincide with this big online harms campaign. Am I a bit paranoid there, or maybe I'm onto something?
Well, Rishi, I would put it this way, citing Shakespeare this time, not Hillary Clinton. I think we have to be honest with ourselves. I think the fault is not so much in our stars, but in ourselves. Now, we know what's going on. Before Iraq, before the invasion of Iraq, there were millions of people out in the street. What has become of us? Have we become inward? Have we become sort of docile and willing to act like obedient Germans in the 30s? We know what's happening to our civil rights. We see fascism blooming. Where are we? Now, if Julian's arrest here doesn't bring people out in the streets, and I don't mean the people that normally go to Harrods, right?
Yeah,
I mean the
people like us
who care about freedom. You know, when you look back at 12, 15, I mean, those were the nobles. Those were not so much the foot soldiers. Those were the nobles that felt really strong, that came on and needed to be restrained. And so they forced them to do the Magna Carta and so forth. So where are the nobles? Now, the nobles were all making big bucks on Sky News and BBC, you know. So we have to assume the role, not only of the working people, but of the nobles. And, you know, we have to be prepared. You know, I.F. Stone, one of my favorite publicists, I'll finish with this. One of his quotes is terrific. He says, look, we are the ones that have to do this because there isn't anyone else to do it. Now you have to be prepared because you're going to lose. You're going to lose, and then you're going to lose. And then one fine day, someone who thinks the way you do or some people are going to be winning. Now, you have to go into that with open eyes, knowing that you might see the win in your lifetime, but it's going to happen. And in the meantime, you have to sort of squeeze out as much fun as you can from doing the right thing. Because as Dan Berrigan says, the good is worth doing because it's good. End of little sermon here.
Well, I'd be an idiot to add to that. Thanks for coming back on today. Let's hope against hope, but let's hope that something happens in the next few weeks and there's some common sense. Let's hope Jeremy Corbyn gets his fingers out of his ears and shows some, I'm not going to swear now, shows some balls, some bollocks, and stands up for Julian Assange. He had plenty of positive things to say about Julian when he was a backbencher. Now he's the leader of the opposition, and he's probably going to be the next Prime Minister. Time to speak up for Julian Assange. RayMcGovern.com, ConsortiumNews.com. Thanks, Ray. Thanks for being you, mate. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Richie.
Look after yourself. Speak again in the near future. The brilliant Ray McGovern, live on the line today, talking about his friend and colleague Julian Assange, who was arrested earlier today at the Ecuadorian embassy, sadly found guilty of breaching his bail condition. He was remanded. He faces sentencing next month. The United States, his enemies in the United States, the deep state, the intelligence agencies, and sadly both political parties are sharpening their knives because they want to punish him for impositioning them and for doing what he has done in terms of exposing what went on in Iraq, exposing what went on in Guantanamo, taking the leaks from Chelsea Manning, exposing those, but even recently exposing some of the disgusting, woeful, dystopian technology that the CIA is rolling out that they plan to use on their own people. Ray McGovern there on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 9 minutes past the hour. A lot of comments came in there. Thanks for those. Steve James tweets, of course, Russia would be interested in Assange. They would also like to know where he gets his info from, says Steve. As for the alleged Swedish rape victim, she's been asked, she has been asking for the case to be reopened as a roundabout indirect way to get Assange extradited to the United Kingdom. Thanks for that. Hi to Joanne Boddington, a pal of mine, a Chorlton musician. How you doing, Joanne? I got your email the other day, Joanne. I will reply to it soon. I'll get on that. If not tonight, tomorrow morning. Hope you're well there. Hi to Tiger, by the way. Lots of tweets. If you want to see what people are tweeting, do go to twitter.com and where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show there. Okay. Right. Jean Ann is listening to the programme. My friend and colleague, Jean Ann Crowley, she makes the point that one of the reasons that maybe people don't take to the streets in the way that maybe they did before was because of the Iraq War, because more than a million people marched in London. And that's often underplayed, by the way, because I think it was far more than a million in London. And I know that millions marched in Birmingham, in Manchester, in Scotland, in Glasgow, and in Ireland, you know, as well, against it. And maybe a bit of apathy crept in. Ultimately, what I've said a million times over the years, people need to come together in their communities. I was speaking to my friend today, Michael, the socialist, the real socialist, and we lamented that people don't come together. We were saying today, if in one square mile around Fallowfield, if in one square mile everybody came together and said, you know what, no more council tax, no more of it, no more of this nonsense, we're not paying anymore, we're not going to take it, it would have a seismic effect if in one square mile people came together. But you see, people have to come together. I'm going to move on. I don't think I'll last till 7 o'clock, till the top of the hour, without repeating myself 1,000 times. But I've got quite a few things I want to talk about that are of interest. I've got a tiny bit of Brexit update for you, just a tiny bit. And then I want to talk about an Australian rugby union player called Israel Folau. I hope I got his surname right there. And I want to talk about a British black writer who's been telling what I think are very tall tales about his experiences of travelling on UK transport, public transport. So we'll get into that in a minute. So last night then, more like this morning, 2 o'clock this morning, that'd be UK time, the European Union said that Theresa May and the United Kingdom could have an extension of the Article 50 process till October 31st this year. That's Donald Tusk there. Yeah, it's actually Vincent Price. It's Halloween, of course, isn't it? So October 31st, we can have an extension until... It's pretty dreadful, isn't it? Theresa May told MPs today in Westminster that it remains her priority to get the UK out of the European Union. That's not true. This deadline of October 31st follows these late night talks, and as predicted by your presenter, it means that there will probably be European Parliament elections here in May. Anne Widdecombe told us on this programme yesterday, didn't she, that it is utterly humiliating for the country. It is. Jeremy Corbyn said it was a diplomatic failure and all the rest of it. Here's Theresa May briefly addressing Parliament today.
I never wanted to seek this extension, and I deeply regret that we have not yet been able to secure agreement in this House for a deal that would allow us to leave in a smooth and orderly way. I know too that this whole debate is putting members on all sides of the House under immense pressure and causing uncertainty across the country, and we need to resolve this. So let's use the opportunity of the recess to reflect on the decisions that will have to be made swiftly on our return after Easter, and let us then resolve to find a way through this impasse, so that we can leave the European Union with a deal as soon as possible, so that we can avoid having to hold those European parliamentary elections, and above all, so that we can fulfil the democratic decision of the referendum, deliver Brexit and move our country forward.
Yeah. That's just a pile of old shite, isn't it? That's a pile of old shite. I felt a bit sad this morning because as I was out doing my thing with the dog, out jogging and all of that, listening to people phoning into various radio stations, ordinary people like me and like thee, and they were properly depressed. I mean, people are sick, you know. us ordinary folk, those who voted to leave, are sick to their stomachs and they don't know what to do about it. Bill Cash is a very senior Tory MP. He's a staunch Eurosceptic, is Bill Cash, and he's a member of the European Research Group. Here's Bill on Sky News speaking with Kay Burley today. This is kind of funny, this. It's surrender, said Bill. It's basically abject surrender by Theresa May. Bill also had some very choice words for the contempt that the European Union is showing the ordinary people of this country. Bill Cash with Kay.
The reality is that it is an abject surrender. In fact, it was quite clear. I mean, you've got people like Tusk, to whom I wrote yesterday when I said that I thought that the whole of their arrangements were unlawful. And that's another story altogether. We'll pursue that one another time. But basically saying, don't waste our time. I mean, who do these people think they are? Talking to the British people like that, talking to our parliament like that.
I don't think they were talking to the British people, they were talking to MPs.
No, no, they
weren't. Because you haven't voted for anything yet.
No, no, that's not true. I've been voting consistently to demonstrate why we stand up for the democratic decision of the British people, standing up for our democracy and for the votes that were cast by parliamentarians who themselves, some of my own colleagues, working in collaboration with Corbyn, for example, who are actually reversing the votes that they cast in the Referendum Act itself, which is a sovereign act of the UK Parliament, which deliberately and exclusively transferred the right to the British people.
Okay.
They're now saying we're going to take it back. This is absolutely outrageous.
And you got on your feet and you said, yes, it was time for her to resign.
Yes, I did.
She's not going to.
Well, we'll see.
You were wasting your breath.
No, I'm afraid, Kay, that's not quite how it works.
Oh, OK. I thought you'd had a vote of confidence in her and she'd won.
No,
so
that was what happened then.
Yeah.
But actually, the accumulation, even since then, of anger in the country and in the grassroots of the Conservative Party has been growing exponentially. And the opinion polls in the Conservative grassroots have demonstrated this over and over again. So it's an accumulative sense of immense frustration. It does matter, actually.
Why does it matter?
I'll tell you why, very simply, because she is the Prime Minister of this country.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, that abject surrender, as I described it yesterday, plus the absolutely outrageous nature of the withdrawal agreement, adds up to a position
she
where
she said she's not gonna, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, I wait and see. I should say
what
that.
What are you planning?
Well, that's a good question to which I
have
an
answer.
I have a very good answer,
it?
But it's not one that I'm going to give you right now.
Why not?
Well, for a very simple reason, that these things have to be carefully worked through.
Pure vaudeville, that, you know, comedy gold. Kay Burley and Bill Cash there. Kay trying to come off all Jeremy Paxman with Bill Cash. It doesn't matter a damn. It doesn't matter a damn whether the Prime Minister has changed or not. Jeremy Corbyn becomes Prime Minister, leading a coalition government, which is very possible now. Labour is going to dishonour the referendum result. They want a second referendum. And failing that, they want customs union membership and they want membership of the single market. It's pure vaudeville. Thanks for the tweets, by the way. An absolute avalanche of tweets today coming into the programme about this. It's, I suppose, there has to come a time when this programme just stops talking about it. You know, even before it becomes official that we won't be leaving, maybe over the summer months, it'll just disappear off the agenda of this programme. You know, there's only so many ways you can tell people that it isn't going to happen and then explain to them why it couldn't be allowed to happen. Talked yesterday nine times, Mrs. Bueller, nine times previously, the European Union has been told to fuck off by various nations, and each time the nations have been basically told by the EU, well, we'll see your fuck off and we'll fuck you off even bigger, and the people don't get their way, and this will be number 10 anyway. I'm interested in this story coming out of Australia about Israel Folau. I'm somebody who likes sport in general. Football, soccer is my sport of choice. Snooker, I love snooker. Bit of tennis, rugby league, rugby union. And I like to zone out and forget about everything by watching a bit of Bread and Circuses. Before one of you snowflakes says Bread and Circuses, I'm well aware of it, right? There's also a lot of good, though, about sport. and about assembling and about people going out together to do things together. But this time, Israel Folau, brilliant rugby player, fantastic player. He's a fullback, and he's been sacked. Or Rugby Australia intends to sack him. He's 30. He's still in his prime, and he would have been a big star at the World Cup this year, which is in Japan, if memory serves me. But he's been controversial over the last couple of years on social media. He's spoken out about gay people. He doesn't like gay people. He's tweeted and put on Instagram things about them going to hell. Gay people are going to hell. He put out a kind of a general tweet about corrupt people and evil people and all the rest of it. They're all going to hell. And he threw gay people in there. I'm going to side with gay people. I know Christian people. I know conservative Christian people. And I'm very open with people. I don't avoid people with whom I disagree. I don't agree with the conservative Christian approach to homosexuality at all, because I grew up around gay people. I worked with gay people my entire professional life, and I've always had a bit of sympathy for gay people. I've often tried to think about what it must have been like for my close friends when they were coming to terms with their sexuality and then explaining to their parents and all the rest of it. Look, I, as you well know, I'm no virtue signaller. Number one, I'm not. And number two, I don't have a politically correct bone in my body, right? But I'd be inclined to say to Christian people, you know, keep your going to hell comments to yourself and just leave people alone, right? You have a right to believe that. But maybe, and you also have a right to say it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here now. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. You do have a right to say it. But rather than self-censor, shouldn't you just have a bit of kind of live and let live and just leave gay people alone? Okay? Tell them you're going to hell. Hell awaits gay people, he said. So I wouldn't be doing that if I were him. Now, I don't think like him, so I wouldn't be doing it anyway. But him getting fired and told that he might never play rugby again does annoy me. You see, this is the problem. I'll be accused of fence straddling on this issue. I'm not fence straddling on this issue. It might sound like I am. On the one hand, don't be annoying people because you don't like their because you don't like the fact that they're gay, and because you believe that they're going to hell because they're gay. Don't be telling people you're going to hell, number one. But at the same time, it's not a great thing that the Israeli sports authorities are going to try and make an example of him by denying him the right to play at the World Cup. Now, they're saying that we've warned this guy before to keep these comments to himself. Anyway, one of the things about this story that caught my attention is Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister, who has become a rock star in political circles because of her handling of the shooting in, or the shootings in Christchurch, which left 50 people dead. They've turned this woman into a rock star. She's, of course, had to weigh in because apparently Junior Folau is married to a New Zealand-born woman called Maria, who's a bit of a sports star herself. She's a netball player. So Jacinda Ardern weighed in, said that the posts were damaging, and she totally disagrees with what he said and the way he's using his platform. And I think this woman has endorsed the notion that the sportsman will be denied playing in the World Cup for his team in the autumn. It's mad, really. Then I suppose there are listeners who might say, well, maybe they've warned him a couple of times to keep his opinions to himself. But again, you're talking about free speech then, aren't you? Again, I'm caught between a rock and a hard place here. Yes, he should have the right to say whatever he wants, but I would say just leave people alone, you know. That's your narrow view, your religious view that, you know, they don't share, I don't share, leave him alone. Anyway, this is the world we're living in now. And it kind of segues just a little bit into a video that I came across on the BBC last night, which pissed me right off. Derek Owusu is a writer. I've not read anything that he's written, but I am interested in finding out more about him as a writer. But he must be good. He must be successful. He was on Radio 5 Live BBC, and he was speaking with a man, the presenter, called Nihal Arsanayake. I hope I pronounced that right. No offence meant if I didn't. Nihal Arsanayake. They were talking about casual, everyday racism, and it pissed me off. Because I felt that the writer, Derek Owusu, was telling tall tales. He talks about how, for example, when he's on public transport in the mornings. Now, I've lived in London twice. I've used the tube. I've used the overground. I've used the buses in the mornings. And I don't recognise what he tells the presenter here. Here's Derek Owusu talking about white people not sitting next to him when there's an empty seat. Now, I could be totally wrong and I could have misread this. I'm all ears, or I'm all eyes for your opinion. Listen to some of this.
There's always seats empty beside me. I mean, I at first I didn't really care because, you know, I was it's in the morning. I don't want anyone sitting next to me anyway. But then it becomes kind of odd when the train is filled up. There's literally people standing up and the chair next to me is still empty.
Has anybody ever seen that? Have you ever travelled in New York City or in London or in Birmingham or in Paris? Have you ever seen a full train and an empty seat next to anybody, let alone some black dude? I don't believe this, right? I don't believe this. This triggered some black listeners today, by the way, and they properly went for me, which is good. It's brilliant. I've no problem with that. It's good. And if they want to come on the programme any time to confront me, I will listen to them with respect. But I just don't believe this. And I call this like a liar on Twitter because I don't believe him. He goes on.
And I'm kind of just looking around like, why doesn't anybody want to sit down?
You know the answer to that question.
Well, yeah, now I know the answer.
The presenter is a dickhead, isn't he? Excuse my French. You know the answer. The presenter is supposed to interject there and say, well, Derek, did you offer the seat to somebody? Because if I was a black man, I'd be pretty bemused if that were true. I would find it funny, and I would actually invite people to sit down next to me. You know? I would say, by the way, folks, there's no need for you all to squeeze there. There's one of you can sit down here. But the presenter jumps in and endorses what he's saying rather than challenges it. But the presenter is himself representing a BAME. He's an ethnic minority.
The answer to that now, you know, and it's kind of, if someone does sit down, they kind of like bring their entire body over to the side, away from me.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Right. So now, somebody does sit down sometimes, but they move their bodies as far away from him as they can get. I mean, the casual racism in UK society is, well, it's positively vomit-inducing, isn't it? What else?
Sort of thing, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know what he means, because I've never seen this.
Yeah, back to you almost.
Exactly, or if I am standing as well, which this always happens.
He doesn't always get a seat now, this is good, right? I was beginning to think he was some sort of magic man that could always get a seat on London transport. I don't think I ever got a seat on a train in London ever, in my time there. So anyway, he's standing up now.
I am standing.
He's standing.
And a person looks behind them and sees that I'm standing behind them. They then turn around so that they can keep their peripherals on me. Do you know what I mean? Just, I don't know, just in case, I don't know, I might pickpocket them or something.
So, when he's standing, he notices now that people who have their back to him turn to face him to keep him in their peripheral, lest he turn out to be a pickpocket. This is why I lost my rag last night and tweeted about this with a few expletives. Does anybody believe that? Is anybody buying that? This sounds like somebody who's looking for a bit of attention, doesn't it? I'm not buying it. What else does he say?
And at first I thought, okay, maybe this comes down to what I'm wearing. You know, you kind of, you know, internalise the idea of respectability politics. But it doesn't matter what I'm wearing. It doesn't, literally, I could be wearing a suit. I could be wearing a three-piece suit and the same thing still happens.
What else? Let's talk about what else.
What else? Isn't the presenter absolutely fucking woeful, isn't he? At least say to him, come on, do you not think you might just be a bit paranoid there, Derek? Derek, do you not think that you might be looking for it, Derek? You know, did something happen with you in the past? Did you have a problem in the past? Did you encounter some, what you might call, hostility in the past? Genuine stuff? Did people say things to you? Where's it coming from, Derek, you know? Because people are going to war. I'll tell you what people are like on the tube in London. Derek says they won't sit next to him even though the train is packed. Derek says if they do sit next to him, they move as far away from him as they possibly can. And Derek says that when he's standing up, they turn around to look at him. Let me tell you the way it really is on London Transport. Let me tell you. Most people who travel on the trains in London in the mornings are gelatinous mounds of insufferable fucking goo that have headphones stuck to their ears and that are glued to a 6-inch or a 5-inch screen that is held in their left hand. The carriage next to the carriage they are in could be blown to pieces by a fucking bomb and they wouldn't notice. So immersed in their pathetic, miserable, narcissistic lives as they are, they couldn't give a shit whether you're black, blue, green, pink, yellow, white, it doesn't matter. They're only thinking about them. When people sit down next to people on trains and buses, they do so reluctantly because people have been engineered to become completely and utterly hateful and intolerant of the presence of others. This is true. This is true. People hate other people that they don't know. They don't want to brush off them. They don't want to breathe the same fucking air as them. They can't stand them. This is how we have become. This is how we have been manipulated. I have seen this on transport in this country. I've said this 1,000 times on this program. I have gotten onto a bus before and I have walked down the aisle. It's been a busy bus and there has been a seat. I have sat down next to somebody and they have looked at me like I was a piece of shit that they've just scraped off their shoe. How dare you sit next to me? This is what has happened to the human condition. So what Derek thinks he's experiencing as hostility towards the black man isn't. It's a casual kind of. I can't find the word to explain what it is. I mean, a kind of a casual, not casual hostility, but a kind of a casual disgust at the presence of other people. That's the truth of it. And you see that up and down the country as people go to jobs that they hate, because if they don't, they will be out on the street in a couple or 3 months' time. They're tired. They're often hungover because they're drinking cheap beer, right, to numb the fucking pain when they get home after hours of travel. So they get up with a hangover. They get on the train. They don't give a shit what you are or what you look like. That's the truth of it. That's how we've been ground down. Black folks were coming on my Twitter feed today to tell me that this is typical of a white man who doesn't understand. I fucking do understand. Let's hear what else Derek and the Asian presenter Nihal Arsaniyake had to say yesterday.
Else, because it's not just the tube, is it?
It's not just the tube. Casual racism is everywhere.
Oh, no, it's all over the place. So,
where else is it, Derek?
I mean, in the book Safe, novelist Alex Wheatall has written an essay called The Fear of the Black Man.
The Fear of the Black Man, an essay.
And he talks about how when he was, well, even now actually, when he goes to literature festivals, just wearing whatever he wants, you know, casual, he's a novelist, he's, you know, he's self-employed essentially. When he goes to kind of like the private, tries to walk into the private areas where all the authors are, he always gets stopped and they say, oh, the guest area is over there. And he's just like, well, I'm an author. I'm one of the authors, so I'm speaking. And they kind of look at him like, oh, okay. And he says that always happens to him, no matter where it is. Do you know what I mean?
What effect, cumulative effect, do you think this has on the psyche of black men?
Again, nothing contradictory from the presenter. No devil's advocate position adopted. Like, so your friend says that every time he goes to a literary festival, he's questioned as he enters the area reserved for the authors, because the big dumb bouncers can't imagine that a black man could write a book. Challenge him. Jesus. Programs are great when there's a little bit of a challenge in there, you know? But there isn't. So anyway, where's this all leading?
I think it makes us even more paranoid.
Wow. Maybe we're getting to the crux of the matter. It makes us even more paranoid. Maybe you were paranoid to begin with, Derek.
It makes us kind of, we doubt ourselves. I mean, I feel like the nature of, you know, British society is essentially gaslights you in a way, because people are so subtle and, I guess, polite with their racism that you start to doubt your own reality and you start thinking, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm just reading way too much into this. When in reality, you're taking, you know, a mental bombardment and just, you know, realizing it.
This is mind fuckery on a scale that I've not seen before. People are so polite with their racism that it's gaslighting. If you've never heard the term gaslighting before, he's saying there that there is a problem, but that society is trying to convince him that there's something wrong with him, that he's paranoid, or that he's losing his mind. That's what gaslighting is. There's a genuine problem with casual everyday racism. People won't sit next to me on the tube even though it's packed. I want to talk about it, but I get gaslighted. So he would say that I'm gaslighting him here because I think that he's talking a load of old monumental bollocks there. There isn't an epidemic of what I would call genuine racism in British society. There are people who despise people because of their background, because of their ethnicity. Of course, there will always be, as long as there are human beings on planet Earth, but not very many. There's probably not even 1 in 1,000 in society. The rest of it is just people struggling to come to terms with the nightmare that is their lives, with the nightmare that is this Orwellian system. And they're looking for people to blame. So it's not genuine racism. A genuine racist is somebody who thinks that a black man or an Asian man is inferior to them, is less of a human being than them. That's genuine racism. There isn't much of that around. There can't be much of that around, because everywhere you go, you'll bump into a doctor or a professional man or woman who happens to be black or who happens to be Asian. You know, what that tells people subconsciously is that, well, you know, we're pretty much the same, you know, in terms of our capabilities, in terms of our intellectual capacity. We're pretty much the same, whether you're black, pink, green, whatever, you know the way it is. They do exist. The lunatics who think that the black guy is inferior to me intellectually, they do exist. Not many of them, though. There's not many of them. You know, I've had one or two on this program over the years and I just laughed my way through the interviews. The writer, Derek Owusu, is a product of this crazy identity politics era that we're existing in now, where people are encouraged to adopt a victimhood mentality, to constantly look out for and to seek validation through victimhood. To seek validation and to seek advancement through victimhood, through the acquirement or the attainment of victimhood. Look at me, I'm a victim. I can't go on the tube without people staring at me. I can't go on the tube without people not wanting to sit next to me, or people trying to avoid bodily contact as much as they possibly can. He's a victim, this guy, who's obviously bright, this Derek Owusu. He's a writer, he's articulate, he's obviously bright, but he wants to allow himself to be a victim and to be adopted by a nanny state. He wants to hand control of his destiny to the nanny state. He wants to give his liberty, his freedom, to the nanny state. And he wants the offices of the state to legislate against that which he is talking about. And that's crazy. And I know some very, very smart black people. And I know some very, 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 very successful black people. And it makes them sick to hear this victim nonsense. Say, I'm not your victim. If I'm on the tram, I'm going to laugh and go, does anybody want to sit here? I don't bite, you know. There is room here, you know. I don't bite, I promise. I know you might have watched a million episodes of Starsky and Hutch and Cagney and Lacey, but I promise you, I'm not going to steal from you. Take ownership of it, man. Take responsibility for the situation if you think it's really going on. Or just grow up. How about that? Just grow up. Nobody hates you. I certainly don't anyway. It's 20 to the top of the hour. I could waffle on now to the top of the hour and play music, but I'm not going to. I'm going to get out of here. I'm still very tired in the late evenings. You know, I had a very difficult time of it in February with pneumonia. I was in a bad way. And I do get very tired towards the end of programmes. I'm not fully recovered from that. So I'm going to take my leave of you today. We've covered a lot today anyway. I'll be back with you on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time. And I'll be back with you every Monday to Thursday next week, live between 5 and 7 p.m. with guests as usual. The Richie Allen Show, Monday to Thursday. The programme is available on iTunes. It's on Spotify. It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes, Spotify. It's on Podomatic.com. And I do upload the programme to YouTube every evening. Do please consider doing this for me. Let me play the jingle. Can I play the jingle? Let me play the jingle. Do this for me.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Please do. If you haven't done before, the only source of funding for this program is you. richieallen.co.uk. There is a PayPal account and there are bank account details on there as well. Look, have a fantastic weekend. Thanks again to Ray McGovern. Go to raymcgovern.com. Go to consortiumnews.com to read Ray. Plenty more to come on this programme next week and the weeks after that. But do join me for Sunday View, where we look through the Sunday newspapers and listen to some of the Sunday morning talk shows as well, all right? Going to leave with Salford's Finest, Bez, and the Happy Mondays. Twisting My Melon Man. Have a great weekend. Bye now.